The Winner's Circle. Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. This is week three of earnings season. We've heard about plenty of losses the last couple weeks, and there are more of them today. But we also have a list of winners this morning. Drug makers Merck and Schering Plow posted profits. So did Archer Daniels Midland. Staffing company Manpower had a good quarter, too. Avon is also donning black. But that may not be enough lipstick for Wall Street today. Right now, the Dow is down 0.1% to 7,928. The Nasdaq is down by nearly 1%. The S&P 500 is down 0.2%. Shares in Europe have turned higher, and in Asia, it was a mix. Australia and Japan both announced more stimulus action today. Citigroup says this morning it's going to try to stimulate lending. The company will spend more than $36 billion on loans to consumers and corporations. It's about time. This is the bank that's received $45 billion in bailout money so far. Here's more from Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer.
Citigroup will pump about $25 billion into U.S. residential mortgages and mortgage securities. The rest of the money will be spent on loans to businesses, students, and consumers. Why the sudden flow of cash? Citigroup could read the writing on the wall, especially after some comments from House Financial Services Committee Chairman Barney Frank. He says banks will have to lend more money to get more cash from the government. Banking analyst Bert Ely says he hopes banks won't be pressured into making bad loans because of politics.
The last thing we want to do is have the government telling the banks who to lend to, how much to lend to them, and at what interest rate. And we're rapidly sliding down that slippery slope.
The new loans come just in time for President Obama's distribution of the second half of the $700 billion bailout package. Citibank's critics say its new burst of lending is timed to ensure more government money. Ely says there's no proof of that. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
An FDA panel will probably recommend approval of a new blood-thinning drug by Eli Lilly. Today's decision could set a precedent for how powerful but risky drugs are brought to market. Marketplace's Dan Grutch has more.
The new drug is called Prasugrel. It's a competitor to Plavix, one of the world's best-selling prescription drugs. Studies found Prasugrel is better than Plavix at preventing heart attacks and strokes, but the new drug can also lead to fatal bleeding in some patients. James Unland edits the Journal of Healthcare Finance. He says the FDA has been criticized for being too slow to approve risky new drugs and for not being upfront about the risks.
This is a breath of fresh air for the FDA to target risky drugs to the proper patients and to warn both the medical community and consumers about them.
Unland says an FDA warning won't stop the drug from finding a big market.
There are still billions of dollars in revenue available for properly targeted drugs. This is not an all-or-nothing proposition.
Analysts estimate that sales of Prasugrel could reach $1 billion a year for drug maker Eli Lilly. I'm Dan Grutch for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, February 3rd on Marketplace.org. The House Financial Services Committee is taking a look today at how to make sure banks have enough money to keep on lending and how to make sure homeowners facing foreclosure keep their homes. Shia Levitt has more.
Lawmakers are reviewing a federal program meant to help struggling homeowners refinance their mortgages to be more affordable, but few lenders have chosen to participate.
Purely voluntary measures aren't doing the job.
Julia Gordon is with the Center for Responsible Lending.
Whatever programs we use have to require lenders to take certain steps and or have to use government money for the government to take those steps itself.
Peter Wallison is a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. He says the government should buy bad mortgages at a discount and then let homeowners repay at more affordable rates.
We are talking about 25 million subprime and Alt-A mortgages, over $4 trillion in unpaid principal amount. So this is an enormous problem.
Both say to solve it, people have to get out of mortgages they can't pay into mortgages they can. I'm Shia Levitt from Marketplace.
The European Union has joined Canada in attacking a clause in the U.S. economic stimulus package, the Buy American clause. It seeks to ensure that only U.S.-made materials are used in the projects funded under the bill. As Stephen Beard reports from London, European steelmakers have been the largest critics of the clause.
The $800 billion stimulus package does not involve vast quantities of steel. One estimate suggests it could be as little as $2 billion worth. But European and other foreign steelmakers are up in arms over the Buy American clause. They argue that being excluded from the stimulus projects will be the start of something worse. Roger Manser of Steel Business Briefing.
If the Buy America policy goes through, foreign steel producers fear being excluded from all sorts of other projects in the United States.
In normal times, the U.S. imports more than 30 million tons of steel a year. Foreign steelmakers are terrified of losing that business, and they argue the U.S. taxpayers will suffer from the Buy American clause. Foreign steel is generally 10 to 15% cheaper than the American-made variety. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
President Obama is expected to nominate his top technology advisor to chair the Federal Communications Commission. If that happens, the agency could have a significant impact on the country's high-tech landscape. From Washington, Ronnie Radbill has that story.
Julius Genachowski is one of the key architects of the president's highly successful internet campaign. He helped draft many of Mr. Obama's telecommunications policies and served as chief counsel to FCC Chairman Reed Hunt during the Clinton era. With Genachowski at the helm of the FCC, improving high-speed internet access is expected to be a top priority. That sits well with Ben Scott, policy director of the public interest group Free Press. He says international surveys show the U.S. is plummeting in rankings when it comes to providing fast, low-cost access to the web.
Every year that goes by that our global competitors have better broadband internet infrastructure than the United States, we lose jobs, we lose economic growth to those countries.
Genachowski supports increasing and expanding broadband service, especially to rural and low-income areas. Unlike former FCC Republican Chairman Kevin Martin, Genachowski wants net neutrality. That means opening up cable, digital phone, and fiber optic lines to competition. Richard Wiley, a former Republican chairman of the FCC and managing partner of Wiley Ryan Law Firm, questions how much Genachowski can get done.
Hopefully, because he's a smart guy, I think he will realize that putting a lot of new heavy regulation in place might not be the right thing to do when these industries are hurting. I think of the broadcast industry in particular.
Unlike his predecessor, Genachowski opposes large media companies buying up TV and radio stations across the country. He instead would encourage diversity in broadcast media ownership. The former chair focused a lot of his attention on cable regulations, such as bundling and pricing. But analysts don't expect Genachowski to be as aggressive with the cable industry. Instead, Rebecca Arbogast, an analyst with investment firm Stifel Nicolaus, says the FCC will focus more on new media, like Google and Yahoo.
The set of voices that are there, it's no longer just Verizon versus Comcast versus a competitive local carrier.
Whatever regulatory action the FCC does take will depend largely on the state of the economy. With the country in a recession, analysts say there's a limit to just how much can be accomplished. In Washington, I'm Ronnie Radbill for Marketplace.
Group tours from China started hitting our shores during the start of the Chinese New Year holiday. U.S. vacation spots are working hard to woo Chinese travelers. Every year, travelers from the country spend $30 billion going abroad. Marketplace's Scott Tong checked in on a tourism expo in Shanghai.
Every vacation spot you've ever heard of has a booth at this tourism fair. From Tanzania's Mount Kilimanjaro to the Aegean Islands of Greece to Thailand's Phuket. And they're all after one thing, a small piece of a giant pie.
The China market, they are a lot of people.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
That's the woman at the Argentina booth. China exports 40 million tourists every year, and it's growing by 20% annually. Exhibitors from American destinations want in on this market, too. But first, they have to do their homework.
Most people are here really to find out what the market is all about.
We're on a fact-finding mission, is to find out what the customer wants.
So we really saw this trip as an exploratory mission for us.
U.S. cities and states are marketing here for the first time. That's because Washington and Beijing just cut a whole lot of red tape allowing group tours to American destinations. So where do Chinese want to go? Anywhere famous, says Rin Ho Pang. She works the crowded Las Vegas booth.
If you are marketing anything to the Chinese, the brand prestige is crucial. It will make or break your marketing plan and all that.
Another winner, Hollywood. Melissa Ayala of Marriott Hotels has been hanging out today with the Universal Studios lady.
And I cannot tell you how excited everybody gets when they find out she's from Universal Studios. One guy wants to order 50,000 tickets.
Ah, the enticing scale of China. But business veterans will tell you, misread this market and you lose your shirt. One precaution on the travel side, expect thin margins. Because for Chinese, price is king.
They are very budget conscious versus some of the other nations that have already been coming to the U.S. for a long time.
The American marketers found some other surprises. Many Chinese assume they have to tote wads of cash around. They don't all like to be hugged, and they love trade show freebies. Matthew Boone is at the California booth.
So when they saw the beautiful, cute Shamu stuffed animals, everybody wanted one, and it was a feeding frenzy around the SeaWorld booth.
Keep that in mind about Chinese tourists. Ready or not, here they come. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
That said, China is also feeling the financial crisis. Millions of migrant workers have lost jobs and the economy is getting squeezed. But people are trying to keep a sense of humor about it all. The Chinese government keeps a close watch on what's posted online, but that's not stopping a wave of jokes about the economy. So this banker calls a colleague and says, "Hey, how's it going?" The colleague answers, "Not so bad." The other guy says, "Oh, sorry, I definitely have the wrong number." In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Have a good day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.